everyone to participate, and we'll be starting in just a couple minutes. Thanks. So thank you, everyone. Please do come in. If there's spots up at the table, and it looks like there still are, please come join us on the table. And I guess we'll start in just a couple of minutes.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the DNSSEC for Everybody session. Thank you, firstly, for coming. The purpose of this afternoon is a really brief whistle-stop tour of DNSSEC, and it's designed to give you a chance, if you've never really understood or never really thought about DNSSEC before, or wondered, I don't really understand it, or I'd like to learn a bit more, this is the ideal session for that. It's a light-hearted, hopefully a bit of fun session. Hopefully, by the time you've left here, you've got a little bit more idea about DNSSEC, what it means to you, what it means to your organisation. There's a sheet on should be on your tables here, which kind of explains the session, tells you who's presenting, and on the back there's a list of really useful resources if you're new to DNSSEC and you want to find out a little bit more after the session. We won't be stopping and starting through the session. We'll just be going. So let me introduce some of our speakers right now. My name's Simon McCullough. I'm from Nominet, we run .uk. We're very lucky to have with us some of the world's DNSSEC experts in this room, of which I am not one of them. But we do have Matt Larson from VeriSign, who heads up the research and R&D at VeriSign. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. We have Roy Ahrens, who's also from Nominet, one of the co-authors of the DNSSEC standard. We have Russ Mundy from Cobham and Sparta, who are very much part of helping to get tools and technologies out for deploying DNSSEC. And we have Norm Ritchie from ISC, of course, authors of Bind, the world's most preeminent DNSSEC resolving software, DNS resolver. So we've got a really great selection of experts here. Do please feel free to ask questions as we go and stop us if there's something that you don't understand. So anyway, let's start. Many of you probably think that DNSSEC was invented in the IETF a few years ago, and as it was a very technical standard. But actually, that's a bit of a lie. And DNSSEC was actually invented 7,000 years ago, back in 5,000 BC. I want to introduce you to a lady called Aguina. She's a cavewoman, and she lives on the edge of the Grand Canyon. She's very pretty. On the other side of the Grand Canyon is her boyfriend. He's called Og. And he lives in a cave right on the other side of the Grand Canyon. The problem these two have is it's an awfully long way around, and it's a heck of a long way down, so they don't really get to talk very much. So one day they get together after they've trekked around the edge of the canyon, and they get together, and they notice the smoke that's coming out of Og's fire, and they start to cook up an idea. And before you know it, they're sending smoke signals regularly to each other across the canyon, and they're chatting away quite happily. And all is good in their world. Unfortunately, along comes another caveman, and this guy's pretty naughty, and his name is Kaminsky. And Kaminsky moves in next door to Og, and he's got a bit of a thing for Aguina too. So he starts sending smoke signals. And now the poor girl's really confused. She doesn't know who's trying to chat her up. So she sets off down the Grand Canyon to go and sort out the mess. And when she gets to the other side, she says, hey, we need to talk to the village elders. And sitting in the camp is a wise old village elder called Diffy. And Caveman Diffy thinks he might have a pretty cunning idea how to solve their problem. So he dashes off into Og's cave, and everyone's like, what's he up to? And inside Og's cave, there's a big pile of sand. And the thing about the sand in Og's cave is it's a funny color. It's blue. And it's the only cave on the edge of the Grand Canyon with blue sand in it. So he's got an idea. And he rushes out with a handful of that blue sand, and he throws it into the fire. And sure enough, the smoke turns this fantastic blue color. And now Aguina and Og can chat away happily. She knows every time she sees blue smoke, that's Og chatting away to her. And every time she sees the grey smoke, well, that's Kaminsky. And poor old Kaminsky's confused, doesn't know what to do, and his evil plot has been foiled. And really, that's all there is to DNSSEC at a high level. So if you remember one thing from today, it's about that blue smoke. It's about putting something into the DNS, into DNS responses that means you know that the response that you've asked for is the one that's coming back to you. And that's really it at a high level. So if you're just going to remember one thing, and we'll talk about that blue smoke again, remember the blue smoke. So now we're going to hand over. Roy's going to take us through a little bit more in depth into what DNSSEC really is.
Thank you, Simon. So I'm going to give you an introduction to DNSSEC. I'm going to start off with the high-level concept of DNS. DNS is basically a whole bunch of zones. Whenever you see a domain name, and remember there are dots in a domain name, a dot will separate the labels from each other. If you, for instance, take www.bigbank.com, every name in there is a label, and everything is basically structured as a tree. First off, you have the root zone. The root zone doesn't know anything about bigbank.com. The root zone only knows about the top-level domain names. The top-level domain names like .cr and .com and .uk, they know everything about the second-level domain names, like bigbank.com. Bigbank.com doesn't know anything about com, doesn't know anything about root, and because this is so nicely separated, it's highly, highly scalable. There's another system involved, and it's called a resolver. A resolver is a little bit of a complex piece, because this is the machine that actually does all the work. A resolver will start at the root zone, and the root zone will delegate the resolver to the next level, and so on and so on. And this goes on, it's called recursion, and this goes on until the question is answered. This goes incredibly fast. And there are an enormous amount of DNS servers out there, and an enormous amount of DNS resolvers out there. And resolvers have been optimized to be even faster by using a cache. A cache is basically where all the information is stored. You can imagine if you've been to bigbank.com before, you don't have to go there again because it's unlikely that in a short period of time this information has changed. So remember this picture. Aguina, the resolver in this case, is chatting with Awk, the server. In our case, as you know, Aguina, the resolver, will chat with many Awks. Some Awks are more awklier than others, but in general, this is how it works. So I'm going to introduce you to a small play. We're going to have a small play to show you how DNS resolving works. For that, I'm going to introduce, again, Simon McKellar. He's going to be the root zone. We have Matt Larson. Matt is going to be the .com zone. We have Rajmundi. Rajmundi is going to be bigbank.com. We have Norm Ritchie. Norm is going to be Joe User. And in this play, I'm going to be the ISP. So Joe User, our real-world user in this case, can we go a little bit to the left for the screen? Thank you. Joe User in this case, he wants something. Joe?
Hi. I'm going to do my banking. So I'm a home user, and I want to go to www.bigbank.com so I can do my banking. I'll hand this off to my ISP.
Thank you, Joe. I have no idea where www.bigbank.com is. My caches are empty, so I'm going to start at the root. Root, I want the address record for www.bigbank.com.
Hey, Mr. ISP. Well, I'm afraid I can't tell you where bigbank.com is, but I can tell you where .com is. And .com is at 1.1.1.1.
Thank you. Com, I need the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I don't know the address for www.bigbank.com, but I can tell you that bigbank.com's name servers are at 2.2.2.2.
Okay. Hello, bigbank.com, at 2.2.2.2. I want the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I have that address. That address is 2.2.2.3 for www.bigbank.com.
Thank you. Now I have this information, and I'm going to cache it for future use, and I'm going to give that information back to Joe User.
Thank you, Mr. ISP. Now I will go off and do my banking at 2.2.2.3.
So this, in essence, is how DNS works. It has been working like that for almost 30 years. Next year, the DNS protocol will be 30 years old. And what you just saw really happens in real life, and it's after you type in a domain name in your browser, for instance, and before you see anything. So this is incredibly fast. This is how it works. But it is so old. When it was designed, there was no security in place. And these names can be easily spoofed, and caches can be easily poisoned. Now, that's a problem. And the reason for that is DNS uses UDP and not TCP. TCP is an internet protocol, and that uses a form of a handshake. It's like when you call someone up. When you call someone up, you state your name, the other side give their name, and basically you have a handshake. And every information you send back and forth gets an acknowledgement. Now, with UDP, it's somewhat different. It's like writing a postcard. You write a postcard, you put up a name there and an address, and you post it, and you just turn away, and you never look back. Hopefully, at some point in time, someone sends you a postcard back. The real problem is you can't actually authenticate just by looking at an address who that person is. So we go back to the caveman story from Simon. Aguina, the resolver, can actually be easily confused because she can't tell who the real Og is. We're going to show you that again in a little play. And if I can ask the players to... So this will look an awful lot familiar as before, but there's a slight catch in it.
Okay. Joe User, I have more bills to pay. I'm going to do some more banking. So, Mr. ISP, I'd like to go to www.bigbank.com.
Thank you. I've cleared my cache, so I have no information. I only know where the root is. And the root is, of course, at 0.0.0.0. Hello, Ruth. I want the address for www.bigbank.com.
Hey, Mr. ISP. I'm afraid I don't know that address, but I do know the address for .com, and it's 1.1.1.1.
Thank you. .com. I want the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I don't know that specific address, but I can tell you that bigbank.com's name servers are at 2.2.2.2.
Thank you. So now I know where the bigbank.com name servers are, and I will go to bigbank.com to ask for www.bigbank.com. Thank you, bigbank.com, and I now have the address for www.bigbank.com. And I have no way to tell if it really came from the real bigbank.com.
Okay, thank you, Mr. ISP. Now I can go off and do my banking at 6.6.6.6.
So again, this is how easy spoofing is. It is really that easy. It goes just as fast as DNS itself. And a solution for this problem is called DNSSEC. Now, it gets a little bit more complex now, so bear with me. I'll try to do my best. DNSSEC uses digital signatures to assure that the information is correct and came from the right place. Cryptography works something like this. You have two keys, and these keys are related to each other. One is a public key, that's the key you give to everyone, and one is a private key, and a private key you don't give to everyone, you keep that to yourself very, very closely. Because everyone knows that you give them that key, everyone knows that, for instance, bigbank.com is associated with that key, I, or bigbank.com, can use the private key to sign something, and the whole world can now use the public key to validate it. Cryptography is basically a bunch of keys and a bunch of signatures. And the public keys and the signatures are just pieces of data, just like an address record or a text record or an NS record. And the cool thing about DNS, you can now store these keys and these signatures in DNS, and you can look up that data, just like you look up address records and text records and stuff. There's another step that needs to be put in. In order for the resolver to trust the root zone, there needs to be a transaction first. So we call that implementing a trust anchor or configuring a trust anchor. Now, the Roots trust anchor is very well known. You basically, if you want to set up a validation in your resolver, you need to basically configure that, and by default, then it will do DNSSEC validation. But also between com and root, and between BigBang.com and .com, there needs to be an authentication step as well. So at one point in time, the keys that BigBang.com uses for their zone needs to be authenticated by .com. And when that is done, the .com zone will place a DS record in their zone. And a DS record is a simplified version of the key that BigBang is actually using. Okay, so in order to show that, we're going to do a play again. And this time, let's first go back to the slide. Remember Kaminsky? Aguina, the resolver, can now verify that the real awk sends a message. Name server has sent this message, and DNSSEC can be used to validate that. Okay. Oh, that was a little bit too fast. Thank you. So, I'm going to ask you to come to the stage again. In your own time. So first step is all of these zones needs to authenticate each other to their parents, basically. So com needs to authenticate themselves to root. What just happened here is a DS record being implemented in the root zone, so now we can trust com. We already implicitly trust the root zone, now we can trust com. The same is happening for BigBang.com and com. And since I now have the key configured for the root.com, I can now start validating.
More bills to pay. So I'm going to go off. I want to, Mr. ISP, I would like to go to www.bigbank.com.
My caches are empty, so I'll start again at the root. Hello, root. I need the address for www.bigbank.com.
Well, I'm afraid I still don't know the address for www.bigbang.com, but I do know where .com's name servers are, and they are at 1.1.1, and I'm going to give you the certificate.
Perfect. Thank you. And by this handshake, I've now validated that the information I received is correct. So I can now go to the real .com name servers. .com, I would like to have the address for www.bigbang.com.
You can probably guess that I don't know it, but I can tell you that the BigBank.com name servers are at 2.2.2.2. Here you go.
Perfect. Yet again, I can validate that information, and it is correct. And now I will go to BigBank.com. BigBank.com, I would like to have the address for www.BigBank.com. Whoa. I'm getting the address, but it just doesn't feel right. I try to validate it, and I can't because the key is wrong. So let me just try this again. I would like to have the address for www.bigbang.com.
And the address is 2.2.2.3.
And so now I can declare victory. We now have the address for www.bigbang.com, and Cruella de Vil has been defeated. There's the address for BigBang.com.
Thank you, Mr. ISP. Now I can do my banking at 2.2.2.3, and thank you very much for deploying DNSSEC.
Thank you. So much for the play. Thank you all. I'm going to hand over to Russ Mundy. Russ? Big Bang?
I guess I'll still be Big Bang and 2.2.2.2. Well, thanks, everybody. We have a fun time doing that. And hopefully it helps bring home, in more human terms, something that is very much down in the bits that most people aren't aware of, aren't really very conscious about. But my portion here is to talk about how one can go about implementing DNSSEC, regardless of where you might be in this big, large DNS array of things. And as you probably know, there's many parts that make up the DNS. There's activities that own names. Many of us in this room own names, so we're holders of names or owners or renters of namespace in the DNS. There's a whole bunch of activities that are involved in getting those names both into the DNS system and managing once they're in there, getting them out to people. And so DNSSEC touches in some way all of these things. And so if for instance your CCTLD activity, chances are very good you have a very high reliance on the viability of what you're doing for your function on DNS itself. So you will probably have either in-house or through a very strong contract relationship, very knowledgeable people that do DNS and know DNS well. On the other hand, if DNS is kind of periphery to your business, you need it for your website and for email, but it's not really core to what you do, you may in fact have all of your DNS activities farmed out to someone. And so I just like to describe what the set of things that you might involved might be. So, like I say, CCTLD operator or another kind of operator, big, important, probably knowledgeable DNS staff, major companies such as HP or IBM have staffs that are very knowledgeable in DNS. If you're a company that really is in the, where it's not that critical, chances are you're just going to use whoever you either registered your name with. Many registrars offer as an additional service running name servers for you. And then there's all of us end users here. Now, here's an illustration of the DNS tree. And you can see that it is very much structured like a tree. Here's the large enterprise of HP. And here's another enterprise of CNN. Now, CNN is a big, active website, and I'll use it in a couple of more examples, but their core business is news. So they may or may not have a large DNS staff. I honestly don't know. But if you do have this large, knowledgeable DNS staff and do most of the functions yourself for DNS, you'll probably want to do the DNSSEC activities with that same staff structure. If you're farming it out in one way or another to another activity, you'll probably want to do it like that also for DNSSEC pieces. So where are all of these pieces in some kind of pictorial form? This is something that I drew a few years ago for an earlier ICANN meeting, trying to illustrate that the content of DNS is really the important part. When we just went through our little play, it was getting the proper IP address to Joe User and not having it spoofed in between. And you saw some of the steps that we went through there. But you can call them the owners, the registrants, or clear over as you see it in the far left-hand side there. You've got registrars. They may or may not be present in every zone, but they're extremely common, and I think by zone count, many more have registrars than don't. Registries, every TLD has a registry. You must have a registry to make it work. Then there's the name server operation, and each zone has to have a name server operation. Many times it is tied to an existing service, but people tend to automatically think in some cases that their registrar must be their name server operator. Doesn't have to be the case. It is in many cases, but it doesn't have to be. You have to have someone to operate the name server machinery. And then on the other side, the DNS resolvers and the actual end user application. So you can see many players are involved, and that's kind of the direction that the content goes, up to the peak and then down to the users in the far right. So here's another illustration of it. Again, in this case, a www site like www.bigbank.com. Someone has to put the information into the authoritative name server for that. Then when the client asks a question over here, Joe User wants to get it out, then a bunch of requests go back and forth, and eventually Joe User gets an answer. If you're dealing with a larger enterprise, this is an illustration from Matt Larson originally did this for an earlier version of this, of CNN.com, and shows you the size of the constellations of name servers involved. So your packets can go to any one of those. And this is an illustration using a tool that some of my folks have developed to actually map queries and responses for DNS. And when you this web page, we did this about 4 years ago, and that's how many queries it takes to fill that one web page. And so it's not just a single query or two or three. If you go to a large website like that, there are very, very many queries, and the complexity continues to grow. This is about 6 months ago to the same website. So huge number of DNS queries. And remember what Roy was saying earlier, that these happen essentially in almost the blink of an eye. How long does it take you when you go to www.cnn.com to get the web page filled? Pretty quick, and all of these queries can be going on behind you at that time before the web page actually, or as the web page is filling. So the important thing that I want to make and continue to make here in this part of the presentation, it's actually the data. It's the data that's in the DNS, the names, the IP address information. That's what really matters. That's what the DNS is all about. And when you do DNS security to the various and sundry pieces, however, whatever pieces you might have to do with, an important thing to remember is that it's still the DNS data that's the most important. DNSSEC was created to protect that data. So as you saw in the play, somebody can't just sneak in and substitute data on you. But again, it is the DNS data that DNSSEC is protecting. And sometimes there's an overly large emphasis placed on protecting the DNSSEC cryptographic material, even to the detriment of not paying enough attention to protecting the DNS data itself. So in the picture that I showed earlier of all of the pieces, the left-hand side of the picture is sometimes called the provisioning side. It's the side where the data itself for a zone gets put into DNS. And the right-hand side is, this is the running on-the-wire part of DNS. And that's the side of things that DNSSEC protects in its active sense. But even on the left-hand side, there are things that need to be done with DNSSEC. As you saw, if you remember the earlier handshakes, the handshakes of placing the trust up the tree, that has to occur before the running mechanism can make use of getting the data out of the tree. The data flows the same way as it has before. And so DNSSEC is on the running machinery side of DNS. So in general, as I'd said before, when you find your spot in the picture of the whole DNS structure of things, and think about what you're doing, and give you a couple examples in a minute here, then you'll probably want to use the same approach you're using today. In other words, if you've got a staff that's very knowledgeable, you probably want to use that staff. If you've got a contractor that does it for you, you'll probably want to use them. So if you're operating a large DNS operation today, you probably will want to make use of the existing products that you're currently using and incorporate the use of DNSSEC into them. For instance, the Bind product from ISC fully supports DNSSEC. I just, in fact, last week I had a meeting with Microsoft, and Microsoft has been making good progress. They've got a beta of Windows 8 out, and they look like they've really advanced what they're doing in that product line. There's many other both proprietary and open source products available out there. And there's another exciting activity, at least exciting for me as a DNSSEC geek, and that is signing services, where if what you're doing today in your DNS operation, if for some reason it's just not viable to incorporate a change into your, whether it's your registry or your name server structure for your enterprise, there are what's now being called a signing service where you can take the data for your authoritative zone, ship it off to VeriSign or Nominet or others, and they will do the signing of the data for you and send the data back to you. So you'll get a larger file back than you sent out, but you won't have to actually make any change to your machinery other than be able to take the flow of the data that was going to your name servers, send it off to the signing service before it gets to the name server, and what comes back goes into the name server. And like it says in the slide, what you do in your particular instance could be a mixture of all of the above. So if you're using vendor products, and I won't mention any more specific vendor products. There's a ton of them out there. We do have a survey of DNSSEC aware products, but there's still many products that aren't DNSSEC aware. And so if you have one of those products and you go to the vendor and say, gee, I want to do DNSSEC, and they say, golly, I'm sorry, I can't, then you have a choice to make. You know, use different products, push on the vendor, wait for them. You know, it's not unlike other features that you may have gone to vendors asking for, and they say, oh, we don't do that yet. But my strongest urging there is to go ask for it, because for at least a number of years, one of the things that we heard in the DNSSEC realm was that customers aren't asking for it. So please, go ask your vendor for it, and like I say, and many do, but there's still a fair number of them out there that do not. Now, it's also possible that given such an environment, again, the signing service possibly might be helpful in that instance, but it's a lot less likely to fit easily in than when you're running and in control of your entire operation. So if you're the owner, holder of a batch of names, I have a bunch of names registered. Most of them are work-related. Some of them are personal. And I have to say, I don't even know what my total number of names are. And so I'm sure there's other people that have that. I've also heard some corporations have hundreds of names. So you need to, again, examine what you're doing with your management of your names that you have registered, and think about how you get those names into the DNS as signed zones by the authoritative servers. So if you're using a registrar and they're providing your name service, then you ask that registrar when they can start offering the service of signed name server operation, since you're buying that additional service from them. If you're operating your own name servers, that then becomes like the in-house problem we talked about earlier. So again, it's a similar situation, but you need to consider what you need to do in the overall realm of things to effectively get to the point where when the signed data is in the zone, it has DNSSEC in it, so that the validating recursive resolver, our friend Roy, can get the information he needs to validate back to his end user. So that's the end of the presentation of some of the high-level approaches of what you need to do. And I think Simon's going to take over with the question set here, but any of us that you want to direct them to are fine, but I'll pass it back to Simon.
Thank you, Russ. Firstly, a quick question to the room, really, before we start questions. Has what you've seen been useful? Has anybody found that useful today? Have you learned something new? Is there something we should have covered that we haven't covered? Go for it, yeah. Grab a microphone. We got another microphone. Okay.
Please, if you could step up to the table where there's mics. And anybody who wants to speak, please do use the mics because we are... that's fine. We are recording the session, and it'll help everybody to hear better. Push the green button.
Hello, thank you. My name is Pedro. I'm a local entrepreneur. I would like to know a little more about the DNSSEC. Is it defined in the ITF reviews? Is there any draft related to it? Is it a protocol? Is currently on the draft level or is already standardized? Thank you.
Roy, do you want to say that?
My name is Roy Adams. Matt, who's sitting next to me at the table, have worked a few years ago on standardizing DNSSEC, basically this version of DNSSEC. So DNSSEC is a standard. It's an internet standard. According to the ITF, they call it a proposed standard. Many of the ITF standards are currently a proposed standard. That basically means that it's fairly well deployed. There's implementations there. There are documents written about best current practice. If you want to look it up, the numbers are 40, 33, 34, and 35. And feel free to come and talk to Matt and I afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, question right at the back here.
Actually, the authentication between the top-level domain server and the underlying server, it's done, as we've seen. But actually, my question is, who authenticates the root server itself? The request coming from the resolver to the root server, and there is no any authentication on this level. But after that, there is authentication from root server to the top-level domain server.
So the in DNSSEC, there's no concept of server authentication, but only the concept of data authentication. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Right now, the query request sent, coming initiated from the user side and sending to the root server. Okay. How to assure that this request is going to that the root server itself? That containing the data.com or .org or going to under layer? This is my question.
There's absolutely no guarantee that when you send a question that it will end up at the right server.
Sorry?
There is no guarantee. There is no assurance that when you send a question it ends up at the right server.
Yes.
But eventually you will get an answer back which contains this cryptographic information which you can then authenticate. And so in theory, it then does not matter where the information comes from, because you can check if it's correct or not. So yes. There is authentication of data. It's independent of where it comes from. In general, you will get it from the root zone, from the com zone, and so on and so on. But in the end, you will be absolutely sure you have the correct information or not. So independent of where it comes from, if that makes any sense.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So can I ask a question? How many of you here are either involved in deploying DNSSEC, have thought about deploying DNSSEC for your organization. Is anybody here who's in that situation? Great. So we've got a few people. And how far along the line are you in deploying DNSSEC? Are you just thinking about it, or have you already deployed? Tell us.
Well, I mean, we started. We have outsourced most of our DNS, our domains that we have registered. We ran into some providers that do not have DNSSEC implemented. So we're migrating part of our domains to other registrars that do implement it, so we can have that outsourced. We also run some of our own name servers, and in those, we are halfway implementing DNSSEC.
Excellent. And how are you finding doing that? Are you finding that straightforward? Are you finding you had good resources available to do it, or did you find
yes, I mean, we found enough information, and we've been winging it, but it's been working fine. So that's been working. We're probably pushing it on our customers because we provide managed security services, so they outsource DNS to us. So we're providing them also part of the services as well.
Oh, that's great. How about some of the rest of you? How far are you along that line of DNSSEC deployment?
We're just, I'm Lito Ibarra from El Salvador. We're just thinking about it. And I would like to ask, somebody mentioned that possibility to send a song to be signed by other and then get it back. I would like to ask regarding that possibility, how long does it take? I mean, in minutes, and how secure is it by itself?
Matt, is that a question? Can we talk about VeriSign signing service?
I mean, it varies depending on the service, but many of them are very fast, like a matter of minutes, if not seconds. And usually they use a protocol called TSIG or transaction signatures to authenticate the transfer. So there's a secret shared between you and the signing service, so they know that they're getting your zone, and then you know that you're getting the properly signed zone coming back.
And just it's probably worth pointing out that there are a number of signing services popping up around the world now, a number of organizations. Some people are doing it for free. Some people are doing it on a chargeable basis. There's some very small organizations, some huge ones like VeriSign, Nominet, and various others are also offering a signing service. So it's becoming a really important part of helping to get DNSSEC deployed and out, particularly if you don't feel you have the resources to implement DNSSEC yourself within your own organization, then the signing service is a really excellent step. And in some respects, a lot of people are seeing it as a stepping stone. Helps them to get on the DNSSEC chain and helps them to get going with DNSSEC whilst they think about how they implement it themselves. So it's a useful stepping stone service as well as something you can use full time. Anyone else? Anyone else thinking about DNSSEC? Is anyone in here is thinking about it and is still trying to decide whether they should or shouldn't implement DNSSEC?
Hi, I'm Luis Furlan from .gt, we're re-engineering all of our software because for about 10 years we've had the same software, which was mostly manual and not automated. And yes, we are thinking about including DNSSEC, but right now it's just that the thought process.
So are you thinking of doing DNSSEC yourself? Are you thinking of using a signing service? Where's your thinking taking you at the moment?
We've been considering both ways. I have some free labor since we're at a university, but I'm not sure we can do it with them, and so we're looking at other possibilities also.
Excellent. Go, Russ, yeah.
Yeah, one suggestion I would make as you're looking at a re-engineering process, look carefully at the products, whether they're open source or commercial or whatever, to ensure that they do support the current RFC-based DNSSEC, because even with a signing service and you're going to run the name servers, the name servers must be able to properly support the current RFCs. So that's one thing that though a signing service is a huge stepping stone to get into it, whoever is operating the name servers still have to be RFC compliant for the name server functionality.
Thank you. That's an excellent suggestion.
Does anyone here have any concerns about DNSSEC? Anybody worried? Anybody think that it's not a good idea? I mean, there are many folk here who believe in DNSSEC very passionately, but there are some who think that DNSSEC isn't such a great idea. So I just wonder if there's anybody here who feels that way or is worried about deploying DNSSEC. Okay, I'll take that as no. So let me ask a quick question to our panelists. If there was perhaps one or two tips that you would say to somebody starting out or thinking about implementing DNSSEC, or what would be your top tips that you would give?
I've been involved in many stages of deploying DNSSEC, and so I've had all the scars. If you currently want to deploy DNSSEC, don't overthink it. There's a lot of software that can manage DNSSEC. For instance, there's OpenDNSSEC. There are the tools that Russ Mundy mentioned, and basically, of course, you need to do some engineering on your side, but there's a whole lot of info in the past about key sizes, about frequent signing or non-frequent signing or key rollover. Basically, do what the top levels do, do what the root does, and you're in a safe place. So use the latest bind software, for instance, or latest NSD software, so you can serve a signed zone. Use software like OpenDNSSEC to sign it and to manage the keys, and then you're in a fairly safe place. Thank you.
How about you, Matt?
And I think I'd add that there are many resources to help you. We have on the, maybe I'm stealing a little of your thunder,
no,
Simon, but on the back of the handout sheet here, we have just a few. I mean, there's really a remarkable amount of information written about DNSSEC, about how it works and about deployment, and there are many people who would be happy to help you. There are several good resources. One of them is the DNSSEC deployment initiative that Russ is involved with. Another is DNS OARC, the DNS Operations Analysis and Research Center that I'm on the board of. So, you know, there are many, many places that you can ask DNS questions or DNSSEC specific questions.
Thanks, Matt. Russ, how about you?
Well, I guess I would follow on to both Roy and Matt's suggestion of don't reinvent the wheel. Look for information that's out there that's available that applies to your situation. A number of people that we've had interactions with over time seem to spend a lot of energy up front trying to create things that already existed. So please use the resources, and there are a lot of folks out there that willingly and happily answer questions and make your steps in an incremental sort of way, and don't try to completely throw out your DNS system and just because you're doing DNSSEC. If you're going to replace your DNS system, go ahead and replace it, but don't do a massive change just because you're going to do DNSSEC. If it needs done anyway, then do it. But if it doesn't need done, just incrementally add in DNSSEC what you already have.
Thanks, Russ. Why don't you tell us a bit about DNSSEC within Bind?
I was just really going to iterate what others were saying. It's not an area, it's not an area where you want to innovate. There's a lot of people have been through this with the lot of intelligence. Everything's thought out. You don't have to invent anything new. And there's a lot of people out there that are more than happy to help you.
So go on, tell us about Bind.
Bind is the standards reference for DNS. It's fully DNSSEC compliant according to the RFCs. And the latest version, Bind 9.9, has inline signing in it.
Great. Roy, go for it.
Just one thing to add. There's from the early days, there's a lot of information and a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, response sizes and stuff, and does it really add security? It absolutely adds security, and there's no problem with DNSSEC. The root is signed. ComAssigned, NetAssigned, OrgAssigned, UKAssigned. There is absolutely no reason not to do it, and there's all the reasons to do it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Roy. Does anybody else have any further questions they'd like us, you'd like us to cover? Anything else you feel we haven't yet answered for you? Please go for it.
Yes, thank you. I had not introduced myself before. My name is Luis. I'm from Costa Rica. How does DNSSEC handle signing key revocation, like when a key has been misappropriated, taken over, or expired, or something? How basically has that handled within the DNS system?
DNSSEC is different from TLS or certificate systems. So in DNSSEC, there's no real revocation mechanism other than time. For instance, a DNS record, a record is signed, has a signature. The signature has a timestamp. It's valid from X to Y. And the idea is to keep the timestamp fairly short. Not so short that you have to re-engineer everything within a minute, but short enough that that signature is not replayed. But in general, caches will drop information after the TTL has expired. So that's mostly a day or 2 days. Thank you.
But I think to your point, Luis, in the event of a compromise or a problem with the key, you would then roll to a new key within your implementation, and that would then be propagated out across the DNS. And so there's no kind of pulling it back, if that makes any sense. Great. If there aren't any further questions, we have there's a whole day of information about DNSSEC, which takes place on Wednesday. Starts at Julie. What time is it? 8:30, I think.
Yeah, it's on Wednesday. It's at starts at 8:30. It's in La Paz C, so upstairs from here. And we're going to have regional updates and stories from people who are deploying DNSSEC. And some real-world examples, lots and lots of useful information. So please do join us, and there's also lunch at the end, just as an inducement.
So thank you all for coming. Hopefully we'll see some of you on Wednesday. We'll be there all day, so there are plenty of opportunities to talk and listen more about DNSSEC. I just want to say thanks to my co-conspirators for helping with this session today. Thank you, everybody. Please do feel free to come and grab any of us after the session. We'll be hanging around for a bit if there's questions you'd like to ask, and we'll be here. So please just come and grab us. But thank you ever so much for coming, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.